Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, welcome back to the Chase Thomas podcast. Late on a Monday where Matt Green, not usually here, but... Matt Green, I was in Dollywood last night. Fellow University of North Georgia alumni, Matt Green's here. Matt, like I said, Dollywood. It's great. The sports renaissance woman and I went, have never been before. She's been a lot, being from Tennessee and all that. Have you been to Dollywood before?
So have you, is that like officially being indoctrinated into Tennessee culture, like going to Dollywood? Like, are you officially a Tennessean now?
I feel pretty Tennessean. I'm not going to lie. It is something where you're in there and it's Tennessee, man. It is some Tennessee. But you know what's funny? So I lost track of how many times, and I didn't tell the sports renaissance woman this because she wouldn't appreciate it. Because it was like one of those things where you want to stop Tori and be like, hey, do you want to know something? That was like what I was about trying to not do to the sports renaissance woman, where I was like, I was sitting on this all night. I thought about texting you about it, but the amount of Virginia Tech and Tennessee stuff all around Dollywood last night was amazing. Because I was like, this is a rivalry. It's not far from each other. Bristol's not far. What are we doing? Why is this not a rivalry? There are so many.
They're
like
true.
I just saw
pitch
so
forge, right?
Yeah, there's so many. Like there, I was amazed at how many Virginia Tech Hokie stuff and Tennessee ball stuff that I saw just congregating together. And I'm just like, there is no excuse for this not just being a yearly rivalry. Like, what are we doing here?
Let's kick Vanderbilt out of the SEC. Like, give Tennessee that ACC rival that the rest of the SEC East has. I'm all for it.
Yeah, because we don't have, like, I mean, you're not going to do the Memphis thing. Vanderbilt's not a real rivalry, so it's like, that would be cool, man. That's what I'm pitching for. So that was something I just noticed.
Give Vanderbilt and Georgia Tech to start playing each other. Like, they would actually care.
The academic bowl, the academic rivalry. It's what the people want. I don't know. I think that it was just something I noticed. But yeah, no, Dollywood's fantastic. Have you been before?
No, I've never been. I've been to Gatlinburg, but never been to Dollywood.
Highly recommend. It was a lot of fun. Got a little chilly as of late, but no, it was great. I had a lobster bisque last night. I'm a big lobster guy, and I didn't know.
Big lobster guy.
I'm a big lobster guy, and I didn't know that it dated back to when I was a child. The mom, I don't know, I just call her the mom. My mother, over Thanksgiving, I forgot how this subject came up, but she was talking to the sports renaissance went about it and was just like, yeah, Chase was always into lobster. And we would just be like, are you going to eat that? Because it's the most expensive thing in the menu. And I would just be like, yeah, I'm really into lobster. So I would eat it.
Had that bougie taste from the jump.
I really did. Lobster roll is like my favorite thing. Love a good lobster roll.
We actually, for Tori's mom's birthday, which was like day after Thanksgiving, we did like a Papado's meal at their house. I don't know if you know, Papado's has this like fondue
okay.
that's got like I don't know, all kinds of, it's like crawfish and shrimp, like all kinds of like seafood and stuff in it. Mm. And they like recreated that. You get like some bread that goes with it. It was amazing. I was thoroughly impressed.
Was it like catered and they just brought it over, or did?
No, like we just Tori and her sister, they just got all the ingredients to make jambalaya, or not jambalaya, but gumbo, and just different kinds of seafood and stuff. It was good stuff.
That sounds amazing. And there's probably a lot of leftovers that you can get back to.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. The fondue wasn't as good for leftovers.
Yeah,
as I liked, but it was. Yeah, I was impressed.
Okay.
But yeah, I was worried. So when you went to Dollywood, I was worried the listeners would think, you know, I was too
Matt's
emotional
dead.
after that Georgia-Alabama game.
Yeah.
It didn't show up for the pod.
I probably should have made an announcement, but no, because like I got back late and I was like, I don't really want to rush this after that and the drive back and forth. And I don't know, just did not want to do too much, as they say. So I appreciate you pushing back a day for this. But no, Matt, to be clear, was not running from the pod. Matt was ready to go. He's ready to get back and to understand and to walk us through what happened on Saturday. So what was your Saturday watching schedule like? Well, walk us through your SEC championship Saturday.
Well, Baylor and Oklahoma State provided probably the game of the day in that noon slot. So that was awesome to take your mind off of the Georgia-Alabama anticipation.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and then just got together with the fam, you know, did the whole thing, and, you know, just didn't go how Georgia wanted it, you know. It's unfortunate.
I didn't text you throughout. Because I know that if I was in that position, it would suck, and I don't want people rubbing it in if Tennessee ever gets back to the SEC's title and all that, and at that kind of run, like, I felt bad. You know that a lot of my family are Georgia fans. Like, it was rough, but it was also just like one of those things where I'm just taking these notes, and I just remember, for me, I don't know when you felt like, oh, this is happening, like the tide, for lack of a better term, the tide is turning here. And it was the Jameson Williams deep bomb. Like, that was it for me, where I'd written down, I was like, oh, this is over, like they're gonna boat race them.
But yeah, but Georgia was still winning at that point in the game.
Well,
so.
No, it was just one of those where the reason I say that is because I'd written down, I was like, they don't have an answer for that. This isn't like Tennessee, where like I don't think they're going to have an answer in the secondary for this. I think this is going to be a shootout, and I don't think Georgia can win in a shootout. And that was just something that I was thinking, and I was like, this is not how you want to play Bama at all. Like, this is, and it's also just not the Bama team we saw last Saturday, or I guess two Saturdays ago at all. Like, it was just such a preposterous 3 hours that I don't know. It was wild, but I go back.
Yeah,
to
without a doubt, it's hard to explain. Yeah, just in terms of the turning point, I feel like the turning point of the game was the fumble right there before the half that Nolan Smith had an opportunity to jump on, and Bryce Young was able to recover his own fumble, and Alabama was.
That was a Heisman moment for him to be able to get the ball back from the Georgia defenders, and just what that was.
I mean,
it's
would
like,
be a Heisman moment if it felt more like an indictment on the Georgia player for trying to pick it up instead of just diving on it. Honestly, you should dive on it, because that's an opportunity, just a free shot on Bryce Young, right? Like, just dive on it, and maybe you hurt his shoulder, right?
Okay, well, hold on. Oh, hold
I'm
on.
Just saying, you just dive in there on the ball. You don't try to get up and run with it. Like, it was Georgia had like four guys in the area, but that would have just been massive to keep it a 17-17 game, because as much as you're saying like Jameson Williams, like that felt like the tide turning, the drive before, because then they got the they scored on the next drive as well, I believe, Alabama. But then Georgia was able to get that touchdown drive with that long touchdown to McConkie on the screen pass.
Yeah.
So they were able to get that answer to make it 17-17, and it didn't feel like the game had gotten away from them, right? But it was that score before the half, and you knew Bama was getting the ball to come back from the half. And then, I mean, what was that, like a three-play drive, like where they hit like the 50-yard bomb to James Williams? That's what felt like the knockout blow. But, I mean, it was Stetson Bennett's going to get all the blame for this, right? Like,
I don't think he is. So I talked to Brooks Austin about this, too, on the pod of SI Georgia, and it like it wasn't Stetson. It was just the secondary just had no answers for this. And they moved around pieces and they covered differently. Like they ran out of different defense and a lot of different stuff that they, Kirby said that they were experimenting and trying new stuff. And it was just like, why would you try new stuff in this particular game against Nick Saban? Like what is that? It was not as much Stetson as it was that. And
yeah,
then,
the defense and Stetson didn't play great. And
no.
He played fine, but it was just how last year when Georgia went down 10 right there at the end of the third quarter last year, maybe it was the start of the fourth, right? When they went down 10 in the second half to Alabama last year, and then it felt like, oh, now we're down two scores. Stetson makes a bad decision, throws a pick, and it's like ball game. And that's essentially what happened here. Like once Georgia got down 14 and then Stetson throws the pick, it's basically the pick six. It's basically game over. So you just, it sucks because Stetson Bennett, I feel like all the criticism he gets is just kind of wrong. Like it's the wrong kind of criticism. It's like all the criticism points to like his arm strength and his height and everything. And that he's not a five-star prospect. He's just like this whatever quarterback, but it's the decision-making that's been his downfall. Like, cause I feel like everyone wants to just call him a game manager because he's not a big time quarterback, but he would be better if he was a game manager. He seems like when he's gotten in some of these close games and granted he's taken a huge step forward from this year, from last year, but it seems like he doesn't manage the game enough. He starts taking those chances and making those bad questionable decisions. And that's what really hurts Georgia. And the first interception, I don't even know if I can put that completely on Stetson because Bowers did kind of change his route right as he threw the ball. So it's a little miscommunication. But, yeah, I mean, the guy threw over 300 yards, like three touchdowns, two picks. Like, he didn't play awful. But it's just the fact that they could get no pressure on Bryce Young. I mean, this is one of the most dominant defenses we've seen in the last, you know, however many decades in college football. And they just got torched. And, you know, there's the questions of, you know, fairly or unfairly of how good the offenses were that Georgia's played. I still feel like it's a little unfair because it's not like, oh, this is the first good offense they've played. It's like this is like the best offense in the country next to Ohio State. So it's not like, oh, they finally play a good offense and they get exposed. Like, yeah, Alabama definitely exposed them. But this isn't just some good offense. This is an elite offense with the best player in college football, because I think Bryce Young clearly wrapped up the Heisman on Saturday. I think, honestly,
I don't know. Kenny Pickett had himself a game too. He had the fake slide this weekend, which was the most iconic play of the weekend as well.
Oh man, can we just talk about that for a second?
Yeah.
Oh, that play, that you talk about grinding my gears.
Uh-oh.
I can't stand that play. Like
the fun police has logged into the chat.
Kudos to Kenny Pickett, you know, for running for a touchdown. But that is the number one problem with the way the game is officiated. Like, if quarterbacks are going to start doing this kind of stuff, like, you need to get off the defense's back about hitting a guy an inch away from where he was trying to hit him, right? He's supposed to hit him in this perfect target zone and everything. Like, and you call late hits when a guy's a step out of bounds or when these quarterbacks are sliding. They slide late and then they end up, you know, making contact with them and they hit him too hard. Like, this is why. Like, these guys are moving full speed, and the only word I have for this Kenny Pickett thing, it's like, it's chicken shit. Like, it's just, like, such a chicken shit play. It's like, I can't stand it. It's, like, totally, like, just exploiting the way defenses are officiated. It was like that Eli Manning, like, great play in the Super Bowl, you know, where, what's his name? David Tyree, or that whole play. It's like, 5 years before that play, Eli Manning gets sacked. But you could tell the defensive players on that play, they didn't want to like get a late hit on the quarterback or something, so they kind of eased up before the play was over. It's like there's just stuff like that that's just – you can't make defensive players like expect to do anything other than go full speed. I feel like that play just drove me crazy this weekend. Like it was, yeah, super crafty and everything, but it just – it totally exploited the way defenses are unfairly officiated. Just to go on a little brief soapbox, that play pissed me off so much this weekend.
If I had to, like, if we had to do something about it, I don't think it's going to be common because I think a lot of quarterbacks are still going to be, they're going to get their heads taken off by somebody at some point if they play with, they do that kind of thing fairly often. If that becomes a thing, a quarterback's going to get wrecked. And then, like you said, we'll see how it's officiated. But, like, I think he should be down. Like, that's, like, a down by... And then that gets dicey, though, is, like, how do you confirm? But it's, like, no, you see it in real time. Like, he was going down. It's, like, the same thing with targeting. It's, like, if you're leading with your head. But if you are clearly going into the motion that you're going to slide, that's it. Like, the play is
over.
See,
I don't think you can call him down, though. I think... Like, there's nothing you can do in the moment right there to prevent that from happening. I just think the result of this should just be leniency on the defense for hard hits, you know, because a quarterback can do this. And that's why people always talk about, like, the Cam Newtons and the Lamar Jacksons of the world aren't officiated like other quarterbacks. It's like, well, that's because they're not like other quarterbacks. Like, these guys can just run for 50 yards at any point. Like, you can't just treat that guy like the same as someone who's going to just give his body up, right? Or just give himself up and go down. So I don't know. I think hopefully this leads to just a little more like understanding when a defensive player hits an offensive player like a half a second too late or 2 inches higher than he should have hit him. Like, I don't know. I just I wasn't a big fan of this play. Reminded me of Reggie Ball back in the day versus Georgia. He kind of did like pretended to go out of bounds and then lowered his shoulder into a Georgia defensive back in the day.
You've brought this podcast back to Reggie Ball at least 3 times this fall.
Reggie Ball,
you're a big Reggie Ball. Like, let's remember some Reggie Ball stuff.
He's an infamous character, that's for sure.
Yeah, you were about to say something else, though. I think.
Just about this game. But yeah, I think we're talking about Bryce Young. I think he's the best Alabama quarterback ever, honestly.
Oh, wow.
Like, for one, he's just a freshman, but I think right now he might be better than Tua. Obviously, what Mac Jones did last year was incredible. Redshirt freshman.
Mm.
But, like, this guy's just, like, as good as Tua was, and you don't want to, like, just because you play with other good players doesn't mean you're not also great, you know? But just so much of what Alabama did for those 2 years when Tua was the quarterback, it's just like everything was on schedule. Like, he got like 4 first-round picks at wide receiver. It's just like slant there, hit him on perfect in stride, 50-yard touchdown. Like, post there, hit him, 50-yard touchdown. Like, Bryce Young seems to have to make so many more plays. Like, this guy, he's a baller. I think he's the best Alabama's had, and that should be scary to everyone in the SEC.
Well, I want to mention something to you about this. So Brooks Austin, he does great work for SI, covering the Dogs, and this was something he had mentioned to me, and I hadn't even considered this, and now this is for you who watches every Georgia game, especially every Georgia Kirby Smart game. With Monken and Coley, did it feel like Coley was calling this game for you? Did it feel like this was one of those where Kirby was way too involved with the offense and way too involved with the way they were attacking versus Alabama? Because you see the disparity, and this was his point, and this is something that I think Georgia fans are faced with a reckoning here of sorts. Because, like, I made a joke earlier this season that they were like, Iowa was Georgia of the North, and we saw what Iowa did, and we'll get to that. Their own Big Ten title game debacle. But the same kind of problems lay themselves bare, where I think this is interesting, and this is something that he saw, which is that Kirby's 8-8 when Georgia quarterbacks have to throw 30 or more times since he's been at UGA. And that's a problem. And it's something that I think when I watch, I'm like, yeah, when Georgia is able to dominate from the line of scrimmage and just run the ball, it's great. But if you're matched up with Bryce Young, it's like one of those things where you have to know, you have to evolve. Like, Ed Orgeron just handed the keys over to Joe Brady and was like, do whatever you want. Dabo handed the keys over to Tony Elliott and was like, do whatever you want. And Jeff Scott. And then you have Alabama. He gave it to Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian, and now Bill O'Brien. He's like, do whatever you want. I just want to win football games. Kirby still has his DNA all over this offense. And I don't think, and his point was that, like, if you watch Todd Monken offenses before this Georgia stint, they don't look like this. That this is still very, very much what Kirby Smart wants to do. It's better than James Coley, and it's better than what it was when he first got there, But it's still this thing where if you're going to get in a shootout with an 2019 LSU or a 2020 Alabama or a 2021 Alabama or a 2021 Ohio State, who I think would have beaten this Georgia team now that we just saw what happens when they get in a shootout, it's that you cannot expect to win football games when you need to play a certain style of game against the very, very best. You can win 99.7% of your games this way, but when you're playing teams across from you that are just as talented and recruit just as well, but they are elite on the offensive side of the ball and they do throw 30 times or more every single game and you don't, you're going to lose that game every other time. Like, that is something that you can't get into. And it was just interesting. Like, I want to get your perspective on that, of like the fact that Georgia did not push themselves and not put themselves, like, practice throwing the ball 30 to 40 times a game to get ready for this type of environment. That, do you agree with that sentiment?
Well, for one, like, I don't know what it means to say it's like a James Coley offense, you know, or to say that Kirby's...
Well, don't focus on the James Coley aspect. It's just more of, yeah.
I think Kirby gets blamed way too much for, you hear that, like, narrative all the time that, oh, if Kirby will get out of the way of the offense, then they can be better. Like Kirby's been a head coach. He's aware of when he's at Alabama, the offenses that gave him the most trouble are the dynamic ones, you know. Yes. Like, he understands Kirby wants to score as many points as possible, right? I think what gets overblown is Georgia's pass attempts. Is there are so many games in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years that Georgia's blown out opponents, but
they should still be throwing, is I guess their point is, like, you should still be throwing and not running the ball late. Just keep getting those reps.
I just don't know about that. Like, when Georgia throws the ball a lot when games are on the line. Like, the first two quarters, three quarters of a game, Georgia's a 50-50 offense, right?
But they're also a 50-50 record. Like, they're 8-8 when he has to throw 30 or more times.
No, I'm saying, like, just in any game, like, okay, when the actual game is on the line, like, Georgia's 50% run, 50% pass. But then when, like, they're blowing 80-20. Someone out, yeah. But when they're blowing someone out, then they just end up running the clock. And so they look more like a 60-40 run type team, you know what I mean? But that's because they have the luxury of being able to do that. I think what the difference between this offense and, or this Georgia team and everywhere else Monken's been, is just probably the personnel. I mean, has he had a roster that was built to run the ball at other sites like he has at Georgia? Like, I would guess not, in just terms of the volume of running backs and
Alabama and LSU have that. They have 5-star running backs back there. They had Clyde Edwards-Helaire. They had Najee Harris. They have those guys. They also have the same talent in the backfield that Georgia does.
No, that's definitely true. And Alabama's offense has been better than Georgia's over the last several years. You know, there's and that's the other thing I think that gets overlooked. It's like, Georgia had their foot off the gas, and basically for every fourth quarter this season, minus the Clemson game and obviously Alabama. So it's like, this team scored 41 points a game before this past week. Like, I think they're at like 40 or something now. Like, they're seventh in the country in points per game. Like, that's a big time offense. And when you're allowing 6 points per game, like, you don't really need to be throwing the ball all over the field. I'm not making excuses for what Georgia did versus Alabama, because, like, they have to get better at throwing the ball. Like, I think that the way this team is constructed, like, with Stetson Bennett, I think they're still capable of beating Alabama. Like, they play the same team again. Also, with John Mechie tearing his ACL.
Yeah, that's bad. Because we saw what they looked like in the second half. They were struggling. They had a lot of punts in the second half.
Without a doubt. And that star position has been the weakness for Georgia on defense all year. Because, I mean, that's the position the Tyke Smith from West Virginia was supposed to play. And Latavius Brenny has been at that position all year, and I don't think he got a snap against Alabama. They clearly made the decision that he was going to get exposed versus Alabama, so they decided to put a guy with less experience in, and he got absolutely torched by Alabama. So Mechie seems to be lined up in the slot versus that nickel guy a lot, and he was just absolutely abusing whoever was on him. I think he had like 97 yards in the first half. But yeah, that showed to be a weakness. But granted, Georgia's got to get by Michigan first, but that could be different in a rematch. But Adam Anderson, I think the absence of Adam Anderson for Georgia is definitely showing now, facing a big time offense like Alabama. Like, he's Georgia's best pass rusher. He's still the tied for the team lead in sacks with 5 sacks on the year, and he hasn't played in the last 5 games. So Adam Anderson is proving to be a big loss just from a versatility standpoint. And he's clearly Georgia's best pass rusher. But if you just look at the game, like I said, the Nolan Smith, that fumble that Georgia wasn't able to recover in the first half. And then that, like, Brock Bowers, you can't poke, like, you can't say anything about what Brock Bowers did, right? Any critiques about how he played. That dude is just a baller. He's the best tight end in college football.
Well, can we stop calling him a tight end? It's like the Kyle Pitts thing. If I hear Kyle Pitts is a tight end,
but
on
he
one
is
more
a tight
Falcons
end.
Broadcast.
I mean, dude blocks. He's right on. He at least is lined up in a tight end spot more often than like a Kyle Pitts was. But that's the other the play where he went up in traffic in the end zone, which was a perfect throw by Stetson Bennett, by the way. In traffic, Bowers went up and got it, just couldn't secure it all the way through the ground. And that was on a third down. That's when Georgia ended up going for it on that 4th and 9 on like the 13-14 yard line, which I know a lot of people were questioning. I personally thought Kirby should have kicked the field goal there, down 14. But at the same time, like, you can't blame him for thinking like 3 points isn't going to win us anything. Like, we're down 14 to Alabama. Our defense hasn't gotten that many stops. Like, we need a 7. It just, the tone, the ebb and flow of the game, it did not feel like Georgia was going to pick that up, and they didn't even come close to picking it up. So I know that's another place Kirby's getting criticized, but yeah, just those two plays, the Nolan Smith fumble recovery, and then if Brock Bowers is able to hold on to that touchdown, like, that's a 14-point swing in a 17-point game. Like, I think Georgia, Alabama was clearly the better team on Saturday, especially since, you know, shaking up the offensive line and Georgia not being able to get any pressure. Like, Georgia, you know, they shouldn't necessarily be confident in a rematch with Alabama, but I don't think they're just clearly an inferior team. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you have an opinion. Like, what do you think about JT Daniels and Stetson Bennett? Like, it feels like every Georgia fan is calling for JT Daniels. I don't know that he makes the difference in the game, but I was also surprised after you saw how Stetson Bennett played down the stretch, like versus Florida. Like, it seemed like Stetson Bennett kind of left the door open to get JT Daniels some reps, and they just never really did that. So I wonder if we come out versus Michigan and we do see JT Daniels get some reps, or if you just, I don't know, if you just trust Stetson all the way. I tend to think this loss wasn't on Stetson, but Georgia's offense also could have been better. So it's a tough decision that Kirby Smart's got to make, and everyone seems to think they know the right answer.
It's complicated, but I also don't think it's weird. So I don't think you can win a title with this gauntlet with Stetson, right? Like, I don't think you can beat this Michigan team and Alabama team back to back with Stetson. Like, that I don't think you can do. Like, that would be one of the all-time great. Like, that is Matt Saracen season 1 Friday Night Lights on steroids. Like, I just, that is so, like, if he pulls that off, he is just a college football legend. And if he survives Aiden Hutchinson in round 1 and then just goes on to slay Alabama for, like, that's just, that's preposterous. Like, that's just, it's pretty wild. Go ahead. Like you said, he missed some stuff. There's it's hard to say because there was clearly a lot of miscommunication in this game. I didn't know what you got from Pickens, but he doesn't seem like he's 100% or right all that much. Mitchell did not have a good game. Bowers was his dude. Like, if he doesn't have Bowers in this one, like, it gets ugly quick. Bowers was an animal, and McConkey, obviously, he has a lot of stuff with, but like, you're not running the gauntlet with Bennett to McConkey duo in the college football playoff.
But don't disrespect McConkey now. McConkey is like Georgia's like 4th receiver, like 4th option, and dude's been a baller for Georgia this year. So he's a weapon for sure.
He's fine.
Honestly, he needs to be on punt returns. Like, yeah. Kyaris Jackson does absolutely nothing on Georgia's punt return.
He scares me for y'all. Like, he is whatever the antithesis of Velus Jones Jr. is, it's Kyaris Jackson on punt returns.
He's more that, what was his name? Wow, I just blanked. Logan Gray. You remember Logan Gray, right?
Logan Gray. Virginia Tech?
for Georgia.
Wait, Logan Gray?
He was a quarterback coming out of high school, from Missouri, like a dual threat kind of guy. And then he played receiver at Georgia. White guy.
Vaguely. Okay, yeah, I do.
He did punts. He was like a fair catch specialist. I feel like the only thing he would do
would
come out to catch fair catches. And it's okay. Like, you don't have a guy that's capable of returning them that can also do fair catches. It was the strangest thing. Hmm. But that's how I feel. Like, Kyaris Jackson, if he's doing a fair catch, like, yeah, he seems solid. He's got solid hands back there. But I would like a punt returner that could occasionally make a play, flip a field.
Yeah, I guess. But that's not, like I said, those are like things that are not going to flip Georgia winning a national title. Like, I think part of it is like the Michigan matchup, I think, is really good for you. And I think that's a better matchup for you guys, all things considered. Michigan had a great year. But with Cade McNamara, with them being resilient on their two-headed monster, running the football, great defense, like, this is kind of the matchup that you want if you're a Georgia fan, because I think also just the fact that these two teams are playing is going to be great. This will be fun. I think it'll be low scoring, very close. This is going to give me all the Notre Dame Georgia vibes, but I think this Michigan team's better than mm-hmm.
Your first point. It's just awesome that Georgia's playing Michigan. Like you said, like, I think it's like last time they played was like 1965 or something like that. Like, these are just the kind of matchups we need to see more often, like just two big time programs like this. But in terms of it being a good matchup, like, Georgia, like, they're not Iowa in terms of, like, we've talked about Iowa just doesn't have an offensive identity all year. Like, they should be a defensive team that runs the ball. They just don't run the ball that well. Like, for what Georgia typically is, they're not quite as good as they usually are at it. Like, Georgia just, even last year too, just Georgia just hasn't been a dominant running team the last couple years, and that's usually their identity. So Alabama, I think what was being underlooked, like how Georgia's offense, I think, was kind of being underlooked going into the week last week. I thought Alabama's run defense was also being underlooked, that like they were just a couple yards a game behind Georgia, this amazing defense. And you saw how good Alabama's run defense was against Georgia. Like, I worry that a team that's able to stop Georgia's run and force Stetson Bennett to make some plays, or whoever's playing quarterback to make some plays, like, that might not be the best matchup for Georgia.
Maybe, but
we got some time to get into Georgia, Michigan.
Yeah. But I don't feel good about, I feel bad for poo-pooing this, but I just, like, how confident are you that they're going to be able to run the gauntlet with Michigan and Alabama? Like, what are your percentage of likelihood right now? I don't think you can be that
confident at all about beating Alabama after you just lost by 17. Yeah. You know, I think,
well, was there enough for you to pull out of that game where you're like, yeah, this didn't go right, but there's still enough for me to believe that if we got them again in the national title game, there's a good shot we could beat them the next time?
Yeah, I think without a doubt, just because I think the Mechie thing is going to be big, and just getting and losing like that. Like, I think every Georgia fan, and it's not like a, you know, it's not an equivalent thing, but every Georgia fan is going to go back to 2017. And when you got blasted by Auburn and Jordan Hare, and then played them again 3 weeks later and blasted them in the SEC championship. So
the difference there is that's Gus Malzahn and Nick Saban.
Exactly. So it's not the same thing, but I know every Georgia fan is going to like try to get some confidence out of that. But like, there's four teams that can win a national championship right now, right? And Georgia's one of those four. So you can't be too upset with your chances to win the national championship at this point, right? Like, it's not going to be easy.
Wait, hold on. Did you say one of four teams that have a shot at winning a national title?
Yes.
No, there are three.
No, four teams.
No, there are three. No. They're 14-point dogs in round one.
Cincinnati has a seat at the table. They are capable of winning a national championship.
How dare you do this to them? They don't deserve that.
I don't think they're going to. It might not be a 25% chance. Like, it might not be a
there's no chance. What are we doing? Why do we have to lie? Like, it's good that they're in. We don't have to do this. We don't have to placate them and just do this nonsense. Like, yeah.
There's four teams that have opportunity to win.
Nope, sorry. Denied. Motion denied on this very podcast. Won't do it. Won't give them the false hope. Cincinnati does not have a shot at winning a national title. No.
And the real story here.
Sorry, Cincinnati fans. We love you.
Outside of the Greg Sankey conspiracy, that Georgia had to take a dive in this one to get two SEC teams in the title. No, I'm just joking. But I see people say that. I see people say that tongue in cheek. But the real story is, wow, and this commercial is literally on TV right now. I was about to bring this up. Stetson Bennett sees American Underdog, this Kurt Warner movie being made, and he said, you know, if I just win the SEC championship and we get in the playoff with Cincinnati and Notre Dame, like, no one's going to care about that. We need some adversity. We need to lose to Alabama. You know, have people have the negativity coming back on the Georgia program. People just kind of forget that they went 12-0. They want to fire Kirby Smart again. There's all the negativity, so then Stetson Bennett's gotta rise up one more time, and that's how he can assure that he gets this story made into a movie.
Hmm. Well, we'll see. I mean, I think you're gonna have some. I know you won't agree with it, but if they do beat Michigan and they get Saban and they get boat raced again in the national title, there will be calls for Kirby to move on. Like, that's just twice
well,
in one year.
Well, there's already those calls, so there's some dumb fans that say.
Well, I'm saying it would heat up. It would just, the anger and just the anguish. Like, it wouldn't be 28-3 Falcons situation, but it would just be enough to really, really just be like, what are we doing here? And this is what's so sad too, is that like, if Auburn just finishes the job and Alabama loses that game, or like Texas A&M finds their way in, or Ole Miss finds their way into the title game and Georgia avoids Alabama, like, I think Georgia finishes undefeated, we don't have all these different conversations. I think it's strictly an Alabama thing. Like, I think they're going to beat Michigan, but I think it's just an Alabama thing, and I don't think they're going to get over the hump, and it's just going to be like, good God. And this was like the Georgia fans who wanted Alabama that I was just always like raising an eyebrow towards. I was like, no, do you want a national title? Like, why would you want that on your plate? You're not going to feel any less. Like, the Braves were not like, you know what? Yeah, it was great that we beat the Dodgers, but like, we're glad we went through them. No, like, I would have rather
have Kershaw. So how good does it really feel?
Well, exactly. What I'm saying is like, no, I'm glad they just made it through. Like, I don't really care who we had to beat to get through. Like, that's not how it should go. It's never going to be that linear and that neat that you're just going to beat the teams that you've always had issues with in the past, and then you're going to win the national title. No, just like, play the best card you're dealt. And hope that Alabama is not one of them.
And the people that say that, like, oh, I want to beat the best. Like, I said that the other day. Like, I was like, well, you know, if Mechie's hurt, like, I think that improves our chance. He's like, I don't want to win that way. I want to win. I want to beat them. And I was like, well, that's the reality. He's hurt now. Like,
right. Like, and y'all lost Pickens.
Like, yeah, right. Like, Georgia's had plenty of injuries. I wouldn't mind if someone else had some injuries.
Yeah. The whole thing is just silly to me. But that's just being a fan.
The last thing I'll say, like, obviously it's frustrating as a Georgia fan to continue to lose to Alabama, but it's like this notion that it's like Kirby can't win big games, or, oh, it's always the same thing. It's like, it's Alabama. Like, everybody's dominating. Alabama's dominating everybody. Like Ohio State, yeah, they beat them once in 2014. Like, they've only lost to them once in the last 6-7 years because they've only played them once in the last 6-7 years. Like,
well, I think LSU and Ohio, like, LSU had their number that, and it's been back and forth.
LSU had the one. They've won like one time against Bama in the last decade.
Well, I mean, they play them close. The whole thing is like, they play them close too.
Georgia plays them close.
I don't know. That wasn't close on Saturday.
It wasn't down to the wire.
Tennessee played them better than Georgia.
I mean, I'm just saying, national championship, the SEC championship the following year. Like, even last year, Georgia had a lead going into the second half. Like, all the games have been close. It's just like this notion that, like, oh, Georgia's never going to be good enough. It's like, if any of these teams were playing Alabama like every year, they would be losing to Alabama. Like, Clemson is the only team that can really talk because they went 2-2 versus Bama. But it's like, let's be
pretty
honest.
Pretty remarkable.
Like, if Clemson played Alabama last year, they would have lost to them again. You know, it's like they lost before they got to Alabama. So I don't know. This idea that Georgia is, or Kirby Smart is anything lesser than because he can't beat Saban. It's like, yeah, it's frustrating that you want him to beat Saban, but Gus Malzahn beat Saban 3 or 4 times. Like, he's nowhere. You want Gus Malzahn? Like, is that how bad you want to beat Alabama? Like, I think Kirby Smart, Georgia fans know Kirby Smart's the guy. It's going to, like, it was a monkey on the back we talked about last podcast. It's going to be a silverback gorilla if they lose twice to Alabama this year, especially after the 12-0 start. But it's like, at the same time, like, what do you want? Like, you wanted to fire Kirby Smart. It's like, that's just a ridiculous thing. You just, you got to continue to have, especially this year, it's going to be super frustrating if Georgia can't win a national championship. They might have like 14, 15 guys drafted off of this team. So they're,
well,
they're,
you're recruiting. Okay. I think he'll be all right.
I mean, yeah, they're recruiting for sure.
And I don't know if you heard Billy Napier's intro where he okayed, like, yeah, we're going to finish last in recruiting this cycle, but we're going to build slowly. It's going to be a process. That man did the full Butch Jones combination with who was it? Zach Reagan on Twitter made this comparison. It's very astute, but it was like, it was a mixture between Butch Jones and I forgot the other coach who did this, but it was like the Champions of Life stuff that he did in the opener where it's like, yeah, we're not going to recruit. And it was like, what in the world was that?
Five star hearts.
Yeah. Like that's been, and I was like, oh no. But for me as a Tennessee fan, I'm just like, oh yeah. Nailed it. Perfect. But then I was like, so like Florida owns us, so we're going to lose to this guy with inferior players for the next couple of years. Great. Going to enjoy all of this. But yeah, either way, I feel bad. I'm sorry, Matt, that the weekend did not go to your liking, but you're in the playoff. Georgia still controls their own destiny. They can right the ship. They have a month. They have the time. Like they have the time to figure it all out. I am curious to see if it sets in both games, though. And also, I'm excited for Michigan, Georgia. I just think that is just going to be a really cool thing, kind of like Oklahoma, Georgia, Notre Dame, Georgia, Tennessee, yeah. When they play different teams. Like when Tennessee played Oklahoma at Neyland, and when Pitt came here, that was super
That's
cool.
That's my biggest, the biggest part I'm torn about as far as expanding the playoff, because that's going to be the best part of expanding the playoff is just seeing all these great matchups you never get to see.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so like hesitant to do anything that's going to, you know, devalue college football's great regular season. But
I have a question for you then.
Go ahead.
If Oklahoma State wins, do you think Georgia still gets in, or do you think they leave out Cincinnati and put Georgia at four?
I think Oklahoma State's four.
And you think Cincinnati's five?
Cincinnati's left out.
See, that's what I think too. When people were like, oh, Georgia got in because Oklahoma State lost, I was like, I think Georgia's getting in even if Oklahoma State
wins. Yeah, it's
like,
I think Cincinnati's out. If Georgia's three and Cincinnati's four, then clearly Georgia's the one they made their mind up about, that Cincinnati. And I thought that's what was going to happen, to be honest. I thought, and that would have been the biggest buzzkill ever for Cincinnati fans, right? Like they thought they had it. They just win and you're in. And then all of a sudden, nope, get jumped one more time. But we can finally hear Cincinnati fans stop complaining. Okay, guys, you got in the playoff. You got a shot. Now here's Alabama. And that's the only that's the only fair thing to do, right? If you're going to put someone, a group of five team in the playoff, it's like it doesn't even matter what the seeds are. You have to make them play Alabama. That's just what you get.
You want to
play big boy football? Here it is. Here's the biggest boy.
Do you think that's why? I wonder if that's why they did it that way, because I think Michigan and Georgia, it would absolutely stun me if that game's not close.
But you're saying that's why they put Georgia ahead of Cincinnati?
Yes, because I don't think they wanted.
I just think the resume. I mean, okay. What's Cincinnati's resume?
I'm not saying for sure. I'm just thinking, like, when I think about it, the likelihood of two blowouts versus one based on how you order these, I think matters. But that's just from my perspective. And they're tired of the blowouts.
No, that's true. I just think at the end of the day, like, because I know multiple people told me, like, well, you know, their best win is better than Georgia's best win. It's like, okay, yeah, the one win over Notre Dame is better than any win Georgia has. But, like, the next four or five wins Georgia has are probably better than any other win Cincinnati has, right? Like, Houston was the conference championship. Like, I feel safe in saying, like, Kentucky, Arkansas, like, There's multiple teams in the SEC that would be in the AAC championship, right? Like Tennessee could be in the AAC championship.
I don't hate that.
Not trying to throw shade to the AAC, but also did you hear Ben Watson this weekend?
Mm-mm.
They asked him like a rapid fire segment. If he had to pick someone to win the SEC next, that's not Alabama or Georgia, who would it be?
Did he say Tennessee?
He said Tennessee.
Oh, good for him, man.
That's a hard question to answer. For one, I would have probably said A&M, but I don't really know. It wouldn't felt good about
that. No, you know what the answer is? It's LSU. The answer is LSU.
Probably. That's probably true.
Like LSU's could probably win it next year. Like that's coming. Like that we can make all the jokes about Brian Kelly.
Alabama's not getting any worse next year.
But LSU, it's not like there's a recruiting drop off. It's not a talent drop off. It's just a better coach immediately. And it just, they have the talent, and you saw it this year to compete with Bama when they're down.
The talent just has to choose to want to play in the games. Like they wouldn't do in 2021.
All I'm saying is it's going to be a quick turnaround. Like people talk about all the different turnarounds. Like the most sure and certain I am about any new coach around all the carousel and all the choices, and we'll get into some of the new ones today. Kelly is the most sure thing. Like Kelly is the most sure thing, winning a title next 2 to 3 years, lock it in, done. Like done.
I agree with the first part. I don't think you can lock anybody into a title.
Well, we can because every single one's done it over the last 20 years at LSU. So we can do it.
Have they done it in the first 2 or 3 years?
Saban did.
Saban was year three.
First three, yeah.
No, 2000 was his first year. So that was year four.
Okay.
And then Miles was 05, 06, 07. So that was year three.
Mm-hmm.
And then 16 was the year Orgeron was the interim. So 17 was his first.
Yep.
As the full-time head coach, then 18, 19. So, yeah, he got it year three as well. So
that's what I'm saying.
Might like, be on to something, sir.
They're coming. Like, I'm not concerned about that one. The stuff is all cringe, all that kind of stuff. It doesn't work. And that was something that Notre Dame fans, and I talked about this on Sports Reporters Assemble over the weekend, was just that, like, look, man, and Andrew Hammond, love him, friend of the pod. We had a lively discussion about this. I don't know if you heard it. He's a big Notre Dame fan, and we were talking about this where I was just confused, and I don't know if you were like this, and this is how we can lead into crystal ball, and then we'll hit the rest of conference title games. But I just the optimism, or I shouldn't say optimism, the certainty that people talk about Marcus Freeman, and just there's no nervousness where it's like nailed it, got the guy, they locked him in, no search whatsoever. There is pressure to up him to head coach because they didn't want the recruiting class to go away because he's just an ace, like top three recruiter in college football, and you were worried you're gonna lose him to LSU or whatever. All that can be true. I like him, he could be great. The chances of him being better than Brian Kelly, not good. They're just not. And you lost a coach who stumbled into 11-1 this year, and we were like, Notre Dame's not even that good. And they just went 11-1. It was a quiet 11-1 year. He has like a 76% win percentage.
It was also a quiet 11-1 because this was a particularly weak Notre Dame schedule.
My point is we've seen Notre Dame before. Like we've seen what it can be and how quickly things can go like that. Back down to 5-7, 6-6, rough recruiting, all that kind of stuff. Just an absolute mess. Brian Kelly was stable. That was all stability.
It doesn't hurt that that's the program he's inheriting, though. Like,
true.
Brian Kelly also
he left it in a better program than
coach in his own right, but he's definitely being put in a position to succeed. But for sure. I feel like it's like the Shane Beamer thing.
Yes,
everyone just likes his personality, so it's like, oh, boom, they got the guy. It's like, well, let's wait. Let's make sure they win some games first.
Right. Like South Carolina fans are excited. I'm like, where do you think these wins are coming? Like, who are you upping in this? Like,
to be fair, like. For year one, they should be excited.
They shouldn't.
I mean, they went 6-6 this year.
Hold on. Okay. Well, then I saw they were feeling themselves this weekend. The Gamecock fan base, I don't know if you saw, they were out here all over social media reminding folks. Do you know what their stat that they get to remind folks until it changes?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. The last team from the East to beat Bama.
Yes. That's what they're sticking to. It's great. Shout out to
like
Stephen Garcia.
You always hear every time the last undefeated team loses in the NFL that the 72 Dolphins pop champagne.
Yeah.
Stephen Garcia lights up a cigar to celebrate.
That would be amazing. I want that to be a thing. I want the South Carolina Gamecocks like from that class. Like they still there's like a group chat of like, are you watching this? Are they gonna do it?
It's crazy too because they won 11 games 3 years in a row. That wasn't even the team that won 11 games.
Mm.
The team that won the East in 2010. I think they went like 10-4 or 9-4 or something that year. And the next 3 years are the ones they won 11 games. Didn't win the East any of those years.
Well, the reason I'm just like, okay, South Carolina fans, like Stoops just locked in his contract. He's not going anywhere. So they're not falling off. Tennessee's only going up. Like Heupel's locked up. Like, Walter Nolan's in play. Like, that is, if you're reading the reports, like I said, I think his parents are from here. They're from Memphis. They, like, quotes this week, it was like, Tennessee's had him on an official visit this weekend. Powell just won their playoff game this weekend. I don't think, it's definitely not a locked in thing. And if you get the number two player in the class, that changes the class a lot. But all I'm saying is, like, that's coming. The money's there. Danny White spent a bunch of money on recruiting and all this other stuff. So, and the new facility upgrades, all that's coming, like $25 million there. Fundraising machine. Georgia's not going anywhere. And Mizzou is recruiting their tail off. Like, have you looked at where Mizzou is right now? They're in, what, top 15 in the 2022 class?
I was not aware of that.
Yeah, they're recruiting really well, too. So I'm like, where are these wins coming? Or where are you jumping up?
Is it really that good of a class? Or is it just a full class already? And so, like, they got, like, 25 commits already.
They have a good class. I think they have at least one five-star. I mean, you know they got Sam Horn, the quarterback from Collins Hill, in the class.
I've been told by people in high school football circles, I think this is the best Collins Hill.
They're 13th right now, by the way.
Might be the best team in the history of the state of Georgia. I've heard people say that.
Well, they're wrong. Because let me show you the team that went.
The Parkview team or something?
Yeah, 99, 2000, 2001, sir. Didn't lose a game for three straight years.
Era?
Yeah, like let's not show our age that much there. Like,
yeah,
that
Missouri, you're right. The 13th ranked class, and they only have 16 commits. So that's that could get better.
So that's what I'm saying. Missouri
worse if some other teams jump them there, but
yeah, they're fine. Like, Missouri's actually, like, they're doing what they need to do. Yeah, Luther Bird, and that was the big name, the number six player in the class, committed to them not too long ago.
The Oklahoma decommit.
Yeah.
Speaking of recruiting, have you seen what A&M is doing? Just absurd what Texas A&M is doing. They could end up with, like, six of the top, I think, like, 20 players in the country or something. Like, yeah. They're just absurd right now.
Well, Walter Nolan is not locked in there. I would keep an eye on Nolan. Because Tennessee right now is 20th, which is really good for where Heupel came in and where we're at right now. So, I'll take 20th at the moment.
I like to look at the average.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of tells you more because Georgia has the number one class right now, but Alabama has the highest average, and then Ohio State per commit, and Ohio State's second, and then A&M is third. So. Hmm. And Georgia's right behind them at four. So it's interesting.
Yeah. And then the last thing I'll say about the Notre Dame stuff is just that, like, if Luke Fickell really wanted that job and Matt Campbell, it's just the certainty of being like, no, we got our guy. It's like, are you sure he's going to be better than Luke Fickell or Matt Campbell? Because we know what they are. We know that they're elite coaches. Like, we know that. They're a commodity. Like, Freeman, I think, may have a better, higher ceiling potentially because he's an unknown and just an ace recruiter and just might be the guy. But I don't know, man. I would be nervous that we did not give a long look at Fickell and Campbell, considering they were both reportedly interested. And I don't know. That would just, my point is, like, it's not that I think he'll fail. I think if I had to guess right now, he'll be worse than Kelly, just because it's really hard to follow that kind of consistency and that kind of winning back to back. That's not common in a lot of college football programs. So we'll see. But I don't know. It's just, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
I'll say the
there.
Biggest thing is, if getting Marcus Freeman allowed you to basically keep the entire coaching staff, that's a pretty big win.
Yeah.
Like, to lose a coach to a program as big as LSU and not have any of the assistants leave with him. And Notre Dame's also in this weird position of like what kind of job they are, that because there is this academic aspect to it. Like, I know Urban Meyer years ago when he took the Florida job, he had the opportunity to take the Notre Dame job, and he's like named after a Pope and he's Catholic. It's like, it was the most perfect fit ever. But the academic aspect is what I've always heard kind of turned Urban Meyer away from Notre Dame. So you worry as a program as prestigious as Notre Dame, I think everyone is just terrified of the PR nightmare and like, just having a job that's vacant for too long.
Yeah.
And it just kind of makes you look bad. You promote from within. Like, this guy's already a part of the culture at Notre Dame. I feel like it's an easy way to justify that, like, we're still on the same path that we were. And we got the guy we wanted. And we didn't need to get someone from the outside. Like, who knows? We'll see how it works out for him, for sure.
Between Mario Cristobal to Miami and Brent Venables to Oklahoma, which do you like more?
Well, I mean, I like who I think is gonna be most successful, more mm-hmm. successful at their job. I think Brent Venables will be better. Mm. Even though he's a first time head coach, I think for one, well documented how I think Mario Cristobal is overrated at Oregon. The recruiting the South Florida thing, like he's gonna be able to do that. He's a Miami guy. Like maybe they got their Kirby Smart. You know, this is home for him, but I don't think that Miami's a better job than Oregon, honestly, like not in 2021, like just with everything they have with Nike and the facilities and just the brand that is Oregon. I think that brand, it's kind of what Miami used to be. Like obviously they're not nearly as legit of a program, but just in terms of the swag and everything like that, like I feel like Oregon has a lot of street cred when it comes with recruits and everything, you know, it's just that brand carries a lot of weight. And it's just very cool. Everything about Oregon is cool to high schoolers. And I just like that's how I always felt about Miami and everyone I knew always felt about Miami. But they were always legit. Like it's been so long since Miami was that. Like what high schoolers coming out now like care about Miami, the Miami Hurricanes? Like maybe the ones from South Florida do, and maybe, you know, a guy who's from that area can recruit that area. You know, maybe he's the one to bring Miami back. There's some programs that get down, like we've talked about Nebraska time and time again here. There's some that I worry about their ability to get back up. Like Miami obviously has the recruiting footprint down there to be able to get it done. There's so much talent that's coming out of the state that's coming out of South Florida specifically, but everyone in college football is coming down to Florida to poach that talent too. So I don't know. I like that an interesting guy is at Miami. They just straight did Manny Diaz dirty. But
well, hold on. Let's stop there, because do you remember what Manny Diaz did to Temple?
No, that's true. But this is way
worse. He took that job and then backed out a couple days after when Miami opened up.
A week? What difference did it really
make? I mean, that's still
almost like it never happened.
I mean, let's just be clear. It's not like his don't throw rocks at glass houses. What is that saying?
Throw stones.
Yeah, that's essentially what, like, I don't know. Manny Diaz is one of the rare exceptions to this where I'm like, I don't know.
I think those who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Not just don't throw stones at glass houses. That's a different reason you shouldn't do that. I think just be a dick move, but...
Also, why are you having glass houses? Who in this world has a glass
architectural
house?
Architectural flaw right there.
Yeah, but, you can tell I don't use that phrase very often.
Yeah, but so I think Mario Cristobal, it's interesting, and for Miami, if I was a Miami fan, I'd be stoked about it, but...
See, I'm not even stoked if I'm a Miami fan about Cristobal. I'm stoked that we have the money again. It's just like they get Clemson's AD after they get Cristobal on board. And suddenly it's like, oh, my God, like they get the money. And then you look at how they got the money and there is some shady stuff there. And then, I mean, that's just a whole other podcast. It's probably like we need to I might make a separate doc, Matt, to like go through all the NIL and booster stuff, and we just do like different pods, like diving in how Miami got Clemson's AD and Mario Cristobal with a sitting head coach. Like that's like an entire episode in and of itself. But
that could be.
I just this is the game changer. It's like when you get the billionaire boosters invested again, you're like, oh, we're back in it, just like that. Like they're just back in it, and Miami. I got in an argument with our text thread about this in the family group chat, because I have a lot of FSU alumni in my family. And we were talking about Florida jobs and Sleeping Giants. And this was like a few weeks back. And I was like, I don't think it's a question that Miami's just the highest upside of any of them. Like, I don't think it's particularly close. And I think they're the Sleeping Giant. Like, if Miami just gets their booster stuff right and the money right, like, they're easily, like, Florida State and Florida can't pull from that. Because I think if Miami were able to get their, you know what, together, they could be the dominant program in Florida. Like, there's really no excuse, just kind of like USC and Texas and schools like that. Like, there's just no
excuse.
See,
I don't know if I agree with that, because it's like you kind of say that about all three of them. Like, if they just if they got everything together.
No, they don't have the money. Like, Miami has the money and the area. Like,
but
there's
why
a difference.
Does Miami have more money than Florida and Florida State?
Boosters. It's just the money. And
I mean, I know it's like a private school and everything, but I would think Florida, I mean.
Well, we just saw UM
like
Health.
The third, fourth highest enrollment in the entire country, I think. There's like 40 something thousand.
Well, it's not about enrollment. It's about who graduated and who does what. Like, look at Phil Knight at Oregon.
That's fair.
It matters who graduated and what. Like, that's a game changer when you get your own Phil Knight.
Yeah, I think the Morgan and Morgan guy, I think he's a big Florida booster.
Mm-hmm. But that's what I'm saying. Like, that kind of stuff, unfortunately, really matters. And it's clear that with these moves that they're focused on cleaning up their football program. So we'll see. And then it's like a body blow thing. Like, it looks like Tony Elliott's still looking for another job. Oregon just got decimated because Moorhead took the Akron job. Now Cristobal's gone from Oregon. Who knows where they go? Because guess what? They're getting late pickings here because a lot of jobs have been filled now. Like Kalen DeBoer, who would have made sense at Oregon, he took the Washington job. Now I just...
Joe Moorhead gonna pull a Manny Diaz and be like, you know...
Yeah, that's true.
I might just go bounce back to Oregon. I still got my office. I haven't actually cleaned it out yet.
He's a big Zips guy. I think he's also an East Coast Pennsylvania guy, so maybe he is not a big West Coast guy. Anyway, I don't know. I think this is all extremely this is gonna be interesting. Like the Oregon job, I agree with you, is a better job, and the Pac-12 is just an easier path to success. But then again, the ACC is not exactly a murderer's row.
It's the ACC, and the talent is already there. It's way easier to get the talent at Miami, or it should be. Theoretically, it should be easier to get the talent. There's just that Nike Oregon stuff. It's, I don't know, it's kind of like an X factor. There's something to, like, I bet you if you went on a visit to Oregon and saw their facilities and everything they had going on, it'd be hard to say no.
Maybe. It's possible. Well, let's hit quickly the other games, the conference championship game. So Michigan blows out, they blow out Iowa. This was just a disaster all over the, like, how do you fire your son? Like, that is the conversation this offseason for Iowa football fans. Did you see what bowl game Iowa got?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Iowa, Kentucky. Who's watching that? I have no... Oh, my God. Like, there...
So, Iowa, Kentucky, I would guess... Oof. Is that the Capital One Bowl?
Maybe. I don't remember which bowl it is off the top of my head, but it's one of the Florida ones, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I would think the traditional SEC Big Ten matchup.
Yeah, and then we're already getting the opt-outs. Like, Purdue's best defensive player just opted out of the Purdue-Tennessee bowl game, Music City in Nashville.
Yeah, Thibodeau has opted out as well.
That's just so... I get it, but man, it's a bummer. It really is a bummer.
Yeah, it's hard to get too worked up about it, especially with what these coaches are doing, bouncing on their teams before conference championships.
Well, see, that's the other thing. It's like that's I see that a lot on Twitter and stuff. I never engage, but I'll scroll through that. It's like, well, they do. It's like, well, both are wrong, or I shouldn't say both are wrong. Both are not good for the sport, is what I'll say. Both are bad for the sport and the product. It's like I get it.
I think the coaches is worse though.
Yeah,
because the players, it's like we all understand these guys. Like, you know,
but no one doesn't not get it. Who's arguing like they should play? They should be playing. Is there people like that still? I guess there probably are.
I mean, there's definitely people. I mean, they're fans. Those are people. I mean, it's.
But I mean, if you talk to Georgia fans, they weren't complaining when they were when guys were sitting and stuff like that. I don't think that was. I mean,
you are, but you aren't. Like, as a fan and watching the product, you're like, wow, it'd be way better to have Eric Stokes out here and Tyson Campbell out here, you know? But. You don't get too hung up on it because you're like, well, these guys gave us some good years. Like, this bowl game doesn't actually mean anything. Like, it's the coaches bouncing when there's still meaningful games left to play. And granted, I guess Notre Dame still didn't actually have – they never actually had a playoff game to play. So that narrative
– It almost happened, though.
It almost did. But so that narrative isn't there with Brian Kelly. But yeah, it's – and the coaches are also – the ones that are constantly preaching the loyalty and the commitment and all that. I think that's why it gets thrown back in the coach's face. It's like, that's what they have to do. They're the ones running the organization. You know, they want everyone committed to the organization and all that. But then you're just bounced for greener pastures and then, you know, vilify the kids who the 18 to 20 year olds that do the same thing and bounce for greener pastures. It's just, that's where, you know, that's where the whole college arguments just kind of get convoluted there.
That's why Rush Probst is a legend. He commands that respect and he has that loyalty. But in terms of what happened in the Michigan game, were you surprised at all? Any strong takeaways from Michigan-Iowa?
I'd have to say I was surprised because I thought Iowa was going to give them a game. So for it to just be an absolute beatdown the way they did, like I wouldn't surprise Michigan won, but I was surprised that this was like not competitive basically from the jump.
Yeah.
Like Iowa was just not able to move the ball like at all. So yeah, I thought it was Michigan needed to kind of like solidify, like, we didn't just beat Michigan, we didn't just beat Ohio State this year, like we're the class of the Big Ten this year.
Yes. Iowa's got to do something. Brian Ferentz cannot be your offensive coordinator next year. This offense cannot exist in 2022.
I'll tell you one thing that surprised me. Donovan Edwards, you remember him, true freshman, a five-star running back, maybe the number one running back, number two running back, I think, coming out this past year. Maybe the best throw I've ever seen a running back make. Like,
yeah,
that was like a 40 yards, 50 yards in the air, maybe. Like, that was a bomb. So kudos to the running back for dropping the dime.
There you go.
Running back pass.
Oklahoma State loses the heartbreaker we alluded to. Gets Baylor. Just the Big 12 cannot help themselves. This conference title game is just the death of this conference.
It really, they have been just barely left out of the playoffs so many times. This was the game of the day, though. Like,
yeah,
just incredible goal line stand to end it.
Did you think he took a bad angle?
Took a bad angle?
Yeah, with how he was bouncing outside. I kept going back, and I'm like, I think if he just turns up, like, I'm just trying to figure out when he should have turned upfield and just, like, rolled into him and just rolled forward.
I don't know. I think he may have just underestimated that defender's speed, because once he bounced to the outside, I definitely thought he was going to get to the corner.
Yeah, I thought it was over. Like, I could not believe he closed on that. Like, I think you're right. He did not think he would close that quickly.
No, it was almost Pig Howard memories right there.
Did you get some Penn State?
Tennessee a few years ago.
No, we don't need to do that. Do you remember the Penn State Indiana finish? Like, did you think?
Of course, I remember that.
That was a joke. That was your thing. You love that one. You love citing that.
The exact ending of the Penn State Indiana game.
Speaking of,
it was called correctly.
Guess who's in the portal? Michael Penix Jr., former Tennessee commit. Also, another former Tennessee commit, Adrian Martinez. The portal is loaded, Matt Green. Tennessee's getting one of, like, a couple of these guys, like maybe two. Like, I cannot wait to see who joins up, because as you know, the cream of the crop, they want to go to Tennessee and play in this high bowl offense. And I'm excited.
Sure, they're going to get somebody.
Yeah.
But that last Oklahoma State drive, 17 plays, 89 yards. 2 minutes and 59 seconds. If it was a 90-yard drive, it would have been the greatest drive in Oklahoma State history. But it was only 89 yards. We got to hype up the Big 12 defenses, man.
Yeah.
This is defense country now. But these two teams forced 6 turnovers. Granted, some of them were some questionable decisions by the quarterbacks. My green stat of the weekend – I actually had two. I'll give you the other one I had. I'll give you the other one I had first, because this one's on top. I'll get back to my topic. My other stat, the green stat of the weekend against my Georgia Bulldogs, that was that Alabama scored more points in the second quarter alone than Georgia has allowed in an entire game all season. So that was my green stat of the weekend. But the bonus stat was Spencer Sanders. He has thrown 12 interceptions on the season. 7 of them were against the Baylor Bears.
That's preposterous.
So, and he threw 0 touchdowns against the Bears this season. 10 of his 31 career interceptions are against Baylor. So a third of his interceptions in his career have come to the Baylor Bears.
That's rough, man. Rough way to go out, but.
And we got to hype up backup quarterback. Blake Shapen.
Yeah, he did the Grayson Lambert.
It's Grayson Lambert. The best he could.
Yeah.
It was no Grayson Lambert performance.
He was almost perfect at the end of the first half, I think.
No, that's true.
He was, 16 of 16? Or something like that.
He was like I think he ended up like 23 of 28 or so. Yeah, so.
It was one of those classic. Yeah, no, I mean, I think this is one of those where I'd written down in my notes when I was watching that game, I was like, I think if Bohannon plays in this game, I think Baylor loses. I think this was one of those where Oklahoma State actually got screwed by Bohannon not playing.
Yeah, that's that could be true. It's honestly, it's kind of how the first game went too. Like Oklahoma State, like they moved the ball more, like much more consistently. But I think the first one, they turned the ball over three times to zero turnovers for Baylor, and they still won that game by two touchdowns. And this time they turned over four times to just two for Baylor. And I mean, they're about 6 inches away from winning this game.
Well, let's run through the remainder and wrap up here late on a Monday, Matt Green. UTSA blows out Western Kentucky. Oregon gets blown out again.
Got that one wrong.
Yeah. By Utah. I don't think either of us. We'll finish with going through the picks and all that. And then Northern Illinois blows out Kent State. Good for Thomas Hammack and Rocky Lombardi. I think we both picked Northern Illinois there. A stunner with San Diego State and Utah State. Utah State winning big there. Louisiana, Billy Napier going out on a high note over App State. Cincinnati does what they need to do against Houston. And then Pittsburgh just boat races Wake Forest. Great season for Wake Forest, but Pittsburgh. Kenny Pickett going out strong. I don't know what else this man could have done to tell America, I'm your Heisman. Give me Alabama's assets, and I could do what Bryce Young's doing. Shout out to Kenny Pickett.
We talked about this on the pod last week of if Pittsburgh hadn't been upset by Western Michigan early in the season, if they were a one-loss ACC champion. Now how it's played out with Cincinnati, do you think one-loss Pittsburgh would have gotten in?
Yes. I don't think the committee wanted Cincinnati in there based on everything we've seen thus far. I think they would have given like one loss Oklahoma State, one loss Pitt. Yeah.
I'm not 100% convinced just because if Clemson was good and Pittsburgh did that, then I think that might have done it. But
I mean, Clemson was good. They finished 9-3.
Yeah, but it's like you're beating Wake Forest. Like, no one really thinks. It's like Wake Forest being top 15 is like when Kentucky is top 15. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, they're having a good season, but no one really thinks they're that legit.
Well,
you know?
The Sports Renaissance like, woman and Tori think they're legit. Have you seen Sam Hartman?
Hey, this is all you. This is Sam Hartman thing. I think this is all you. But yeah, I just.
He's a handsome guy.
As good as they were this year, they're just. I mean, what's the best win they had? Was it Clemson? Like, they beat the 20th.
No, the best win was at Neyland. Like, it takes a lot to go into Neyland early in the season.
I mean, at Neyland was a good, but that's, in all seriousness, that's probably their third best win of the season.
Like, and that was behind, a Joe Milton game, by the way. That
behind,
was a Hooker game.
Clemson and Wake Forest.
But, yeah.
But yeah. That's true. That Hendon Hooker, things are probably different with Hendon Hooker, but, because Tennessee's offense was so much better with Hendon Hooker than Joe Milton, but.
I don't want to talk about Joe Milton. I think I'm good on that one. I'm good for forever on the Joe Milton experience. Well, how did we do? Like, let's wrap up there. How did we do on our last pick'em of the 2021 season? We'll get into our bowls soon, and we'll map out our bowl schedule and how we want to do that in the playoffs. But how did we finish out this this year,
Matt
Green?
Last one of the season, you went 4-6 overall and 4-6 against the spread. I went 6-4 overall, but 5-5 against the spread. So that brings us to a grand total on the season. I guess I think we got a bowl game's got to be a whole different season.
Bowl game's different, yeah.
Yeah,
opt out, everything is different. This is the end.
104-50 overall was my final record. You were 79-75 overall. So I beat you pretty good on wins and losses.
I made some money. I made enough to get a $5 5 for $5 at Wendy's. I did enough.
For sure. And then against the spread, I was 84-67-3, which, you know, I should start putting some more money on that.
You
with
really should.
Numbers. And you were 70-81-3 on the season. So still respectable, but just under 500. So, and then Zeus was 6-6 on the year. So shout out to Zeus for finishing 500. He battled back you know, maybe Maddox by next season, he'll do some homework and he'll be able to have some insight to give the listeners.
We'll see. We'll see. Well, Matt, this has been another great season. Is this officially the end of our year two of the full ride here on the Chase Thomas podcast?
Yeah, gotta love it, man.
These years are flying by. Like, I can't believe we already finished another college football season.
Yeah, without a doubt. Oh, and last thing, you saw the Heisman finalists were announced.
Yes.
So Bryce Young, Stroud, Pickett, Hutchinson, Will Anderson absolutely hosed. I don't know how he's not a finalist.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's you can only have one defensive player. I guess maybe that's the Heisman rule. But I guess there's no question, right? Bryce Young, clear Heisman winner.
I think he's going to win it. But I do think Pickett will come in second and we'll get some votes.
Like, oh, you think Pickett is second, huh?
I do.
I could see Hutchinson being second. But honestly, I think Will Anderson was probably the best player in college football this year. Like, I would have voted Will Anderson ahead of everybody but Bryce Young.
Hmm.
Like, dudes, I mean, once you see his stats stacked up to, like, Chase Young and Joey Bosa and Ndamukong Suh, just that he had 30 tackles for loss. I think 32 after the Georgia game. Like, just an absurd season for that guy. Like, 16 sacks, 32 tackles for loss. Like, dude's a monster.
Yeah, for sure. I also just don't get worked up about the Heisman. It just doesn't I can't do it. I'm just like, no, they're all awesome and they're awesome in different ways. It's not going to affect my day whatsoever. I'm just going to look at it and be like, oh, that's interesting. Okay. But it matters to those kids. And you would like to see the best represented in college football.
Just a quarterback on one of the best teams award, if you would care about the Heisman a little bit more.
Hmm. That probably would help if there was more chance of more diversity across.
You could just be on a 9-3 team and it's like, oh yeah, Eric Berry or something.
Yeah.
Like, that's the best player in college football. You know, like, there's certain guys like that, but that's the first one that comes to my mind. It's like, he wasn't even considered, I feel like, for the Heisman. And that dude was just, that was the best player in college football. But yeah, that's all I got.
Eric Berry. I remember that being in the stadium for that. When they did the Halle Berry, Eric Berry thing at the Tennessee-Georgia game. I remember being there for that. And it was like, Eric Berry. Man, that dude missed out on so much money. Like, he was a NIL. Like, if he was around for NIL, goodness gracious. Eric Berry, the amount of endorsements he would have pulled in Knoxville and everything else, man.
I mean, there's basically nothing tighter than a good defensive player that scores touchdowns. That's pretty much as tight as it gets. Like, Ed Reed, Troy Polamalu,
Marlon Davidson this week against
Deion
the Bucks,
Sanders, just Charles Woodson. Just those are, that's just about as tight as it gets. So, Tyrann Mathieu.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I remember I went to the 2008 Tennessee at Georgia, and you know, Knowshon was always known for his popping up every play. He'd pop up, sprint back to the huddle or whatever, and I remember Eric Berry got him on the sideline and he did not pop up. He just kind of rolled over. Eric Berry was a stud.
There you go. Matt Green, thank you for another great fun season. This is a lot of fun, man. This is one of my favorite pods to do, and I look forward to these every week. And I'm sad that we will not have regular season football to preview, but the season's not over. The season's not over. We still got bowl games and the playoff and everything else, but the regular season is officially done, sir. But thank you again. I can't say thank you enough for joining me on this and making the time. This has been great, and I hope and I shouldn't even say I hope, and I know the listeners agree.
No doubt, man. That's we'll figure out when we get together for these bowl previews. I need to stomp you out on some more pick'ems.
Yeah, I think we do pods. We get us ready for pod scheduling. Is we break them up into pods. We pick like the handful of what's coming up, and we hit them at a time, like 4 to 5 at a time, and just go through them. That could be fun.
Yeah, that's the way to go. But yeah, man, happy to be on here every week.
Absolutely. Good stuff. Absolutely. Matt Green, I'll talk to you very soon.
Yes, sir.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah. Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.